Welcome to Real Time with Women Leaders in Pharma. My name is Joanna Wilson, and I sit on the Communications Committee at WLP, and I have the privilege of being your host for this episode. We are coming to you from Toronto and London, where I have the distinct pleasure to be speaking with a senior leader in the advertising field, not only in Canada, but also the United Kingdom, Aqua Anoha, where we will examine a topic that unfortunately is often reduced to catchwords: diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we are calling our conversation today, Pale, Male, and Stale: Getting to a More Colorful Future. Understanding and taking action in our industry is imperative. As Maya Angelou said, do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. And I promise you that after today's very personal and relevant discussion with Aqua, we will all walk away today knowing better so we can each do better. Aqua is currently an Executive Vice President, Managing Director, EMEA for Tank Worldwide. She combines strategic expertise and global project management skills with the superior global and local marketing knowledge she has obtained from close to 20 years in the pharmaceutical industry. With a background in project management and marketing, Aqua has executed successful campaigns and strategies for leading pharmaceutical organizations such as GSK, Veeve, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Sanofi within pre-commercial, in-line pipeline, and launch spaces. So I'm absolutely thrilled to be able to have some time with this very busy woman and to talk today about diversity, equity, and inclusion. So welcome, Aqua. We are thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Joanna. Just listening to what you said about me and, ooh, that's
where
a lot.
Where does the time go? And can yeah. I tell you, looking at you, there's no way that you are close to 20 years in the pharmaceutical industry. So,
Thank you.
There we go. But we'd love to learn. I mean, I'm always inspired to hear what their journey was in the professional career. So can you tell us a little bit about that? What was your journey to Tank?
So I have to say my journey, I realized my journey once I got to one of my final destinations, interestingly. So my journey to Tank really, I would say started when I was probably about 8 years old. And I didn't know at the time that it would inspire or be part of the catalyst to me getting here. But one of my favorite TV shows when I was allowed to watch TV as an eight-year-old was an American situational comedy called Who's the Boss? Judith Light and Tony Danza. And there is just something that connected with me, which really was a premonition or forecasted where I would be today, because I just found it so intriguing that the main character, Judith Light, Angela Bauer, was an advertising executive who lived outside of the city in Connecticut and ran and worked in advertising at an agency based in New York. And I think secretly it was because I love the thought of, you know, the dress up, as I thought at the time, of her getting dressed up in suits and carrying this sort of interesting official looking suitcase and having conversations with people and teams and leading. And she also had a personal life that was quite a contrast in many ways to how in charge she was. That would be part of my journey. And as I went into the practicalities of life, I had the pressure from my family to go into the sciences in school. And I thought, I think channeling them, that I would go into medicine and become a physician. And then I realized that I may have the handwriting of a physician, but not the passion to pursue going that route. But certainly I really love sciences, love the idea of having a conversation and creating something strategically or creatively out of it. And so I married my science background with my sort of marketing, selling, and my inspiration from Angela Bauer, and essentially landed roles within the pharmaceutical industry space, within marketing and sales after university. And at some point was appointed or recruited by Tank to come onto the agency side, where I realized being a marketer for many years that it's actually a really great creative agency and creative agency partner that can help one to communicate really powerful messages and creative to a physician or patient audience. So I'm really so thrilled and thankful to Angela Bauer, character, for kind of keeping that fire and desire in me to kind of push and pursue to bring me to where I am today.
I love that. And I love that you combine sort of the art of communications and marketing with the science, the medical science, to combine to get into healthcare marketing. I think that's fantastic. So, you know, I know building a better future for your daughter is something that's really important to you. So can you perhaps share with us what diversity, equity, and inclusion mean to you and why they are personally important?
Well, yeah, it really has become part of my guiding light is molding, I guess, or hopefully being part of creating this human being, my daughter, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, the hopefully happy, contributing, passionate person, adult that she'll become. And although I grew up in a time where I didn't necessarily see in every sort of channel for media people that looked like me, I mean, Angela Bauer character, she was a white woman. There is definitely something to be said for having good role models and the idea of if you don't see it, you question if you can become it. So that is, I guess, a tenet that I carry forward in terms of my approach to parenting is, you know, my husband and I trying to model that behavior that we want our daughter to emulate. And being a Black female, the whole idea of what you're modeling and what she's seeing or not seeing, the diversity, equity, inclusion, representation element is just part of that mix. It's undeniable. I mean, the sort of behavior that I'm trying to model is that of a female who is Black. And so though at first I was perhaps reluctant to be sort of taking on the charge of, you know, pressing a button on diversity, equity, and inclusion in my personal and professional life, because I felt that you know, I'm an individual and I'm just moving through this world. And that should be all that matters. I quickly learned that, no, I mean, there are challenges and issues, and denying them or sort of not staring them straight in the face and sort of having those tough conversations with my daughter and with her friends and with her school and in my workplace are not modeling the behavior that that is going to, you know, propel her to being the contributing citizen to society that I know she can be. So I think it just is a necessary part of the conversation around diversity, equity, and inclusion. And ultimately it's humane. It is the human approach to existing in this world. So we all, regardless of whether, you know, you're a white, you know, male or a Black female or having other kind of sort of diversity elements, we need to all be having that conversation and ensuring that we remember that this is part of humanity, is to welcome and acknowledge the challenges and the joy that surround it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said something and give me a minute because I'm going to refer to Lizzo here, but you talked about the idea of seeing it or maybe perhaps a role model. And I remember in one of her recent acceptance speeches, Lizzo said, you know, I was looking to find someone who looked like me, but then now I have to say, girl, you have to be it, right? It's not, I can't look, now you're going to be the one. So do you think that you had a role model, or were you the one that was breaking the barrier so that you're now a role model for others?
I think it was a combination. I kind of stitched that together, right? So I had the fictional character of Angela Bauer, who, okay, from a female, or, you know, identifying as female, gender role model, there was that element, in terms of, you know, being Black and a racialized individual. I certainly had my parents and my siblings around me, my mother, who was very much, or is, and continues to be very much a role model in terms of, you know, the type of behavior and approach that a Black person should be having in the world and in their life, you know, professionally, looking towards. I've had many male, you know, white male mentors and role models who have had that attitude, and in some cases, a collaborative leadership style that have been a role model to me. So I think, yeah, you take what you see kind of is representative of what you would want to be or who you are from the menu that's in front of you. For me, it wasn't just one person. And in parallel, I was also looking to myself as being it in terms of, you know, comparing myself to myself as opposed to comparing myself to others around me, not only because I didn't see a lot of other people around me, but because it is, I do believe, an inside job in terms of whom you should be comparing yourself to rather. So right. The better version of who you were, you know, previously, and trying to better elevate your previous versions of yourself.
So many things that you're saying that I want to dig into, but one thing that has particularly stood out is you've said throughout your career, it's not just been one person, right? So, you know, in early discussions you and I've had, we've talked about the importance that we need to listen to all points of view. And then, you know, you've said, take a step back. So what can we learn about your approach to really understanding the perspective of colleagues who come from many different backgrounds?
So I recently was listening to a podcast with Wayne Gretzky, who I just love him. Of course, my Canadianism comes out by proclaiming that. And he was mentioning that his dad used to say to him, and this is a common saying, but because I just recently heard from him, I'll cite his dad as quoting it. He said that his dad would always say, you were born with two ears and one mouth for a reason. And in terms of Wayne Gretzky, he has this sort of quiet, calm leadership, sort of powerful approach to achieving his results and goals, which is definitely because he really took that advice from his dad in terms of, you know, observing, listening, not assuming that your point of view and your mindset is the only valid approach. So I really do force myself, even when it's difficult to, even when I'm in situations where I think I know the answer, or I very well may know the answer, or have something to contribute, to pause and to listen. So I think that's critical.
Well, and the idea of different approaches to solving a problem, yes, certainly is something that we all need to think as we go forward. You know, the more minds you can bring to a problem, the better the solution will be. And you know, to sort of talk about that, you've also said to me, you know, without diversity of thought and experiences, our work and contributions suffer. So knowing that you have a team, you very likely have direct reports, how do you make your teams, make your colleagues feel a sense of inclusion and belonging on a daily basis? And perhaps what are some examples that we can take with us too in our work lives?
So I believe, and I know we talked about this in terms of arming ourselves and in a professional context, myself and my teams with data on the whole notion of, you know, the more diversity of thought, the more diversity from a representation perspective we have, the better the collaboration, the better the culture, the better the output, the product. It, the creative industry I'm in couldn't be any more perfect, perfect laboratory to test that theory. And I see that every day, where the work, as we call it, the creative product suffers when you do not have, different, approaches, different mindsets, people with different experiences, people with different skill sets, people with different perspectives, contributing to interrogating the work and creating what it is our product. So I run all of my meetings and we have that from, you know, our sort of company culture, values, mission statements, briefing documents, sort of our valuation criteria for the work, wherever we can and wherever there's a conversation to be had around how we work, the work we're doing, the output. That criteria of, is there and has there been a level of diversity of thought being brought to this work is a question I'm constantly asking. And I do ask it of myself. I ask it for anyone who's in a meeting. People know me. If you are not offering a point of view or a solution, then you're removed from the meeting. It's really, you know, we're all here to be working together and to be building something. And I think, you know, as leaders, we have the responsibility to be creating a safe space for that. I do recognize that because that's some feedback that I had from some of my team's junior members who were brave enough to flag that, you know, it's great that, you know, team leaders or senior leaders are saying, oh, we want to hear from everyone. And, but we don't feel safe all the time in giving our opinions. We don't feel that our, because we don't have the decision-making authority on the final say, we don't feel that our contributions are going to be valued or listened to. So I really took that to heart and yeah, have really worked to reformulate, how everyone on my team runs meetings and how I run meetings myself, because every voice counts.
Okay. So I love when you said creating that safe space.
Yes.
And I think we've all heard that, especially as, if someone is new, let's say in the industry, how, is there one tip you have for creating that safe space?
It's it needs to be a criteria, an objective, something that the senior leader or the leader, whoever the decision-making person is, or that level of authority, needs to be held accountable in some tangible fashion to creating that safe space. So whether it's in performance evaluations or whether it's in, as I say, the assessment of the work that that team has done, whoever is in charge, whoever is making that decision, they need to be interrogated that, you know, are you living the values of, in my case, our organization, that are directly responding to the need for leadership, leaders to create a safe space and to ensure that everyone feels that they belong and that they're opinion matters. So I think it's a top down situation and the leadership needs to be modeling that behavior as well. And seeking input from those on the team who are across, you know, up and down the hierarchy and asking them, they will tell you, you know, asking them, how can we create a space where people feel it's safe to speak up or to contribute? What needs to be done? What right. examples have you seen? Mm-hmm. How do you discuss and what is it in your peer group circles, personally and professionally, that make it comfortable for you to be able to speak up?
Yeah. And I think too, while we still have a long way to go, I do believe that we have seen some growth in the area in terms of creating a safe space. Some.
Yes.
But I did want to, and this is the reason for us coming together today too, or rather maybe I should say, this is the inspiration for our topic for today's discussion. So something you said, which really stuck with me, is the old guard mm-hmm. in our business. Mm-hmm. Pale, male, and stale. So how do we really move the needle away from this to something more representative, more diverse, with a more creative output?
You know, I think we can take some... I think we can take some lessons and best practice on this from the sort of gender, sort of male, female identifying gender equity successes that I will say that, you know, for example, my organization and other organizations have had. Again, there is still a long way to go in some areas around gender equality, certainly particularly, you know, as it pertains to transgendered rights and other gender groups. But from a more classical or an example that has progressed more positively versus the others of male, female, I think that we need to look to what have we been able to do as an organization to progress the needle in terms of minimizing, you know, the gender pay gap between male and female, which has closed somewhat in our industry. Again, still some work to do there, particularly as it pertains to females who are in sort of mid-career or who are coming back from parental leaves, maternity leaves. So I think that if we can figure out, you know, who were people speaking to, what types of conversations, what types of data were gathered to be able to kind of push some of that forward on the gender disparity piece. There's a lot that we can apply to other types of disparity, whether it's, you know, disparity across racial lines or ability lines or otherwise. So I think that data, as I said, arming teams and decision makers with data to show, you know, how is, for example, the racial demographic sort of shaping up today and where is it going tomorrow? What is actually what's the data in terms of representation from gender lines, racial lines, ability lines? And even if we can see what that representation level is and see what our own data is internally at our organizations, you will see that sadly there are gaps. And if we can even just get some sort of agreement that at a minimum, we should be in a place like Toronto or Montreal or London, where your office is, we should be at least representative of the demographic, of the racial demographic in the cities where our offices and our businesses are being run. That would be huge. And there flows everything in terms of let's make sure that we are recruiting and having measures in place to be able to access more diverse talent pools as it pertains to recruiting for roles. And let's make sure that that is happening at all levels of the hierarchy of an organization, not just at the junior levels or the mid levels, but also at the senior and above executive levels. So data, know where the representation gap is and try to put in measures to at least access that more diverse pool and also adjust the criteria. So people will say to me constantly, and recruiters, that you know, it's hard to find Black female creatives in advertising. And it's like, okay, well, if we don't think to look outside of, you know, the pure play creative advertising agency, yes, that's part of the problem. Like, we know that. So, you know, the criteria in terms of our openness to the types of CVs we're looking for, to the types of industries we're looking for, need to expand. And we need to really figure out where are those transferable skills, because of course, we're just going to continue to perpetuate the issue if we're trying to look in an industry where it is severely underrepresented to try to recruit for more representation. Like, it doesn't make sense. We've got to broaden that net.
Absolutely. Now, I want to be a better ally. So it's, you know, it's up to everyone, right? So I would like to be a better ally. So what advice would you give to me and to others so that we can all be better advocates for DEI in the workplace?
What advice? Yeah, it's a great question. I would go back to the listening piece, educating. So listening and understanding people's point of view and not taking a pause before jumping in with your point of view, especially if it is maybe contrary or even additive to what the individual is saying. So allowing people to feel that they are being seen and heard by giving them that space to talk and for you to pause to listen. The education part has been quite controversial, I know, in terms of, you know, that burden to educate often being on, you know, the marginalized group or the group that is being targeted. So, you know, ally also means to me taking ownership and being accountable of at least bringing yourself up to a certain level, speed, putting in the work that you are demanding of the individual who you're seeking the guidance from to invest in terms of educating you. You need to put in the work. And I do think that, you know, checking in and being transparent and saying, I need help here. I don't know, is this okay? And, you know, really looking for those moments and those opportunities to, in a genuine way, surround yourself with people that don't look like you, that have differing thoughts and opinions. I would also add in there.
Okay, great, wonderful. One last question for you. Clearly you're passionate about what you do, and you're doing some fantastic work at Tank. So maybe you can let me know what some of the work that you're most proud of at Tank, and maybe where you've seen the biggest impact.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I do work within a strategic and creative agency. And one of the things that we say is that we are, we believe that really amazing creative can solve challenges. So we have done things such as on this topic of representation, where, you know, typically, classically, in a photo shoot, a new creative campaign where there are going to be human images, the imagery prior to this campaign was always of a white, you know, Caucasian female or male. And that was sort of what we would call what the main image was for this brand in their main creative campaign. And it's now almost 3 years ago, we really pushed to have more representative main hero images, as we would call them, main brand imagery. Because this is a brand that is commercialized across the world across many markets, and the world is diverse. So we worked really closely with the clients very upstream to challenge what would normally have been, you know, we're doing that single sort of image. And, you know, once that image goes into the different market, it'll be on the individual markets to kind of support themselves if they want to try to figure out how to have a more representative image. And we challenged that. And we said, no, we need to, as you're the global client, you're the lead here, you need to set the standard to say, no, we're going to invest in making this representative, inclusive. And that was what was done in comparison to previous. Again, was not 100% perfect. We didn't have, you know, all angles or facets of representation there from a, you know, an ability perspective, et cetera. But we did move the needle in terms of from a racial diversity and representation piece, having those clients invest in and invest in time and money to recruit the talent that would be representative and to produce high quality campaign. So for me, that was a huge win, because that had not been, you know, the brand had been out for what, almost 10 years at that time, and had never had that approach to their global campaign and photo shoot. And so really proud of that. And that was solving a business challenge, because this was something that the markets finally said really allowed them to implement quicker and to really have a more authentic, genuine connection with their customer, which is what we want.
There's many things I know our listeners today are going to take away from you, but the idea of challenging and questioning the status quo, certainly you've made that loud and clear. And you know, a couple of things that I'm really taking away is the idea of to be an ally is to put in the work. Mm-hmm. And as you say, to educate myself in order to know better and do better, and to mm-hmm. listen. Mm-hmm. And certainly creating those safe spaces so we can all bring our authentic selves to work is a wonderful reminder for this week. And, you know, you are our own Judith Light. And I know that you, just like Angela Bauer inspired you with Who's the Boss, you are certainly going to inspire others today and will continue to do so. So thank you for that. And thank you for your time. And it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. So, you know, just thank you as well to the WLP listeners. And be sure to visit the WLP website to get familiar with future episodes. And I wish you all a wonderful rest of day. And to really, as Maya Angelou says, know better so we can do better. Thank you again, Aqua.
Thank you.